Okay. Parshat Yitro. Good. So I would argue that the most important thing about Parshat Yitro is the Aseret HaDibrot. You can argue with me. You can say there's other things that you like more, but that would seem to be the most important thing. You know, and Judaism has always had a very funny relationship with the Aseret HaDibrot, because on the one hand they're very important, on the other hand you may not want to overemphasize those because we have a whole bunch of other commandments as well. And there is somewhat of a tension about what is the relationship between the Ten Commandments versus the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach. On the one hand, or what's the relationship between the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, between the Aseret HaDibrot and all Taryag Mitzvot, all 613 Mitzvot, on the other hand. But even when we think about the commandments, there was in the Gemara there was a discussion about whether the Aseret HaDibrot should be in the daily tefillot, because that would give it its proper respect and daily reminders of what our obligations are. But there was always this fear that then people would think that they only are supposed to keep the Ten Commandments and not supposed to keep other things as well. So that's what I'm saying, is that there is a tension. There was a story that took place in the late Middle Ages where a particular rabbi became a rabbi of a city, and he was told that there was a Pinkas Ha'ir, and the Pinkas was all the local ordinances that were written for that city. So he was told that each new rabbi had a right, that was part of his privilege, he had a right to record and to recommend, not just recommend, to say, these are the laws or the customs which I'm saying that now should be enacted in the city. So he was asked, do the people really follow them? They said, absolutely, whatever each new rabbi writes. So he wrote in them, in the Pinkas Ha'ir, he wrote the Aseret HaDibrot and said, halavai, that people at least follow this. But, and, you know, people obviously would write far more important things like, do you blow the shofar during Chazar Tashatz or during the thing? And these are things that got people far more excited. Anyway, when it comes to Aseret HaDibrot, I have a very simple question, which I am not asking today for the first time. What's more important? Is it these Ten Commandments that God said? Listen carefully. Or is it the fact that God said Ten Commandments? I'll say it again. Is the more important element the content of these Ten Commandments? Or is the more important element the fact that the heavens open up and God spoke, where the content is secondary? Is the more important element the revelation or the content of the revelation? You can debate this among yourselves, because I think that the answer is very simple. What's the answer? Right, which means what would be the importance of the Aseret HaDibrot if it weren't from God? Right, if it came in 10 fortune cookies. And they were really good ideas, but they came from 10 fortune cookies, that would obviously be of somewhat less.
But since they are from God, the content is super important.
Right, but the content of all of the Torah is from God. So again, that takes us back to this tension. Perhaps, as I said, that's what I started with. But if I had to make a decision, why should I have to make such decisions? Why ask such questions? Why? What kind of person would say, who do you like more, your mother or your father, or which of your children you like the most? Right? Who would ask? Who knows? Who would ask such questions? But over here, there is at least one important element. And what is? If you were choosing a Haftorah, what are you going to try to pick up in the Haftorah? Or are you going to try to pick up the content, and therefore a follow-up on the content, or are you going to try to pick up a follow-up on the very fact that there's a revelation? What's the matter, Marion? You ready? She wants me to go away again for a couple of weeks. So you're not willing to separate. but again, if you had to pick a Haftorah, what do you pick? Do you go searching through Navi where there's discussion about the importance of law? Or do you go searching through Navi where it doesn't speak about law, but it speaks about revelation? So what's the answer? What does the Haftorah choose? Which seems to clinch our argument and answer our question and end our debate. Okay. So if you were to look in the beginning of the Haftorah, it's in Yeshayahu in the 6th chapter. Bishnat mot hamelech Uziyahu ve'er'eh et Hashem yoshev al kisei ram v'nisa v'shulav mele'im et ahichal srafim omdim ima'alo shesh knafayim la'achad b'shtayim yichase panav u'v'shtayim yichase paglav u'v'shtayim ye'ofef. V'kara ze ozeva amar kadosh 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 Hashem tzevakot meloch laretz kvado. Do we need to read the whole thing? There is no discussion of law over here. What is this a description of? A description of what we would call what?
An epiphany
of a giloy shechina, right? Which in one word in English we would say a revelation. There is something, though, somewhat curious about the Haftorah. Again, this choice itself, we think we understand and we're not troubled. It does continue, and actually the Ashkenazi custom is to skip a little bit, and we end up going all the way to Perek Tet, which is really quite unusual to skip that much, and goes to the section, Ki yelod yulad lanu ben nitat lanu v'teach misra al shechmo, v'yikreshmo pele yoetz el gibor avi ad sef shalom. Obviously, first child in the family and named after all the grandparents. Right, that's a very long name. You agree? Pele Yoetz El Gibor Avi Yad Tzar Shalom is probably one of the longer names in Tanakh. So why this would be the continuation and why in order to get to this point is also not clear. Hopefully before I finish, I'll get back to this. And if we're focusing on this kid who's born, it would have been really nice to have gotten to the point, to the part of what was skipped. Again, you probably didn't want to have a three-parak Haftorah, but part of what was skipped was in source number 2. V'yosef Hashem deber el Achaz lemor, sha'al lecha ot me'im Hashem. Achaz, who is a king who fell into disfavor with God, and he's told by the prophet that, of course, he can do tshuva and he can rekindle his relationship with God. And then in order to indicate this point, God says to Tel Achaz, go, pick a sign. Sha'al ha'ot, pick a sign. Me'im Hashem alakecha, make sha'ala o agbe lamala. V'yom Achaz lo ha'sha'al v'lo anaset Hashem. He goes, I'm not going to ask, I'm not going to try to test God. Then nonetheless, V'yom Hashimun ha'beit David ha'it mikem la'ot anashim ki tamu gam et elokai. L'chein yitein Hashem hu lachem ot. God will give you a sign. Hine ha'alma hara. V'yoledet ben v'kvashmo Immanuel. By the way, how would you translate? Ha'alma, what does alma mean? There's a young girl. Hara, what does hara mean? There's a young girl who's pregnant. V'yoledet ben, she's going to give birth. V'kvashmo Immanuel, and his name will be, and God is with us. So therefore, the sign over here is that this young woman who's pregnant is going to have a child, and therefore that indicates this rebirth, this rekindling of the relationship with God, and therefore there's hope, there's continuation, there's a new generation, and we continue, and then eventually the child who's born, we're told, ki yelad yulad banu, the child is born, and the misra will be on his shoulders, he will have responsibility, and then we're told specifically, it will continue in back in Perek Tet Pasuk Vav, L'merbe Misra L'Shalom, In Ketzach Yisei David V'Amlam Lachto, L'chinoto L'sadam M'Mishpat U'Tzaka, Me'atava Adolam, that therefore the Davidic throne will return and will last forever. So therefore the message over here is I think quite straightforward and simple. But by the way, it is somewhat interesting what we skipped and how you translated it, because those of you who either spent a lot of time either on the streets talking to missionaries or reading the New Testament would have known right away that this verse is the verse that they used to prove the virgin birth. Of course, there's only one or two or three problems. It never says anything about a virgin birth, but they take the word alma, which all of you easily translated as young woman, and alma is not the Hebrew word for virgin. It's not bitula. Ha'alma, the young girl, hara, which is present tense, is pregnant, so they somehow mean, oh, you see, the virgin will become pregnant, and somehow they connect this prophecy with Achaz, with something that happened 700 years later, and somehow Achaz was supposed to feel better because Mary was a virgin, even though she was married and probably had older children, and has a child afterwards called Jesus. So somehow all of this is supposed to work, but the mysteries of God are beyond me, so how can I understand this, but and by the way, it's claimed, I've heard missionaries claim that the Jews are very embarrassed of this verse because it talks about the virgin birth, therefore we skip it, and we don't read it in the Haftorah. So they probably do want us to read three chapters in the Haftorah, but it's interesting that we don't read it. Again, it's not so surprising we don't read it, because it's just not part of, it's not part of the connection, but the question isn't why we don't read it. The question is, why did we go from Perek Vav, which was about Revelation, and then we need to get all the way to Perek Tet, of course, in the process skipping most of Perek Zayin and Chet. Yes. A matter of fact, as a young woman who cheats and is pregnant tries to hide her pregnancy, and it's very clear from the verse in Mishlei that it's talking about a young woman and not every young woman is chaste. Okay. I don't know. I think alma. I'm not sure if it means maiden or if it's one indication of age. Okay. I don't know. They read the same one. They just don't go as far as we do. No. Yeah, because they wouldn't care about Christological sensibilities and sensitivities. Right? They've maybe. We'll leave that to the scholars of Yeshayahu. Not nearly as much. Okay. So, the choice of the Haftorah, let's restate, and restate it as simply as possible. The choice of the Haftorah evidently picks up on the very fact that there was a revelation. Full stop. Now, this is something which is curious, which I expected every single one of you to jump up and to stay. Okay, I'm kidding. But we read this Kriyat HaTorah about Aseret HaDibrot on another day of the year. What day is that? What day is that? Shavuot, right? Okay, I'll try again. We read this another time of the year. When is that? Shavuot. Excellent. And when we read it on, why do we read it on Shavuot? Because we like to believe that Shavuot is Zman Matan Torateinu. Whether it is or it isn't, we've discussed and we've written about and we've bored people in the past about this. But the Torah never tells us it's that exact day. But let's be honest, it's more or less that time. So what do we read on Shavuot, and what is its Haftorah, is actually subject of debate. Look at source number 3. The Atzeret, this is Gemara in Megillah, which actually, it's the place in the Gemara that talks about all of the readings. It says, Ba'atzeret, we read Shiv'ah Shavuot. So what do you read about on Atzeret? You talk about what the holiday is. What's the holiday called? Shavuot. So what are you going to read about that? You're going to read about Shavuot, about the 7 weeks, and about the agricultural aspect. Umaftiran and Haftorah then would be from Habakkuk, Perikimel, and you can look up and see why that would be the connection. Acherim Omrin, others say, so here we see there's a machloket, that what do you read? You read from Perik Shemot, Perik Yutet, B'chodesh HaShlishi, and what does that lead you towards? Shemot Perek Kaf, which of course is the Aseret HaDibrot. So the second opinion is, no, you don't follow the agricultural aspect of the day, rather you follow the historical / theological aspect of the day, which would be Matan Torah. And then what would the Maftir be? Umaftirin Yecheskel Perek Aleph B'Merkava. And you would be, your Haftorah would be the Merkava of Yecheskel. So, if it's the opinion of Shema Shavuot, then it goes with Habakkuk. But if the reading that you're going to do is going to be the reading about Aseret HaDibrot, which we said, what's the most important aspect of the Aseret HaDibrot?
Revelation.
So what's our second indication that we are in fact correct? Because we have another opportunity to read Aseret HaDibrot from Yitro. And over here, again, we are given a Haftorah whose major theme is a theme of revelation, and that is the Merkava of Yechezkel. The Gemara then concludes, V'ha'idna, and we, what do we actually do? V'ha'idna, di'ika trei yome, because we have 2 days of Chag, so what do we do with this machloket? We do both. Avdidan kitravaihu be'ipcha. We do follow both of them, but we switch the order around, and therefore on the first day we read about Matan Torah and about the Merkava, and on the second day, what's the matter? Surely. In Israel. Vahidna is Babylonian Aramaic. Sorry. So the Bavli tells us that in Chutzlaaretz, which by the way,
ironic.
Yeah.
The whole agricultural aspect.
It's very ironic.
You know, it doesn't really
jive. There's a famous Mugin Avram who asked the question. He does the whole math based upon how we understand when Matan Torah was. The 50th day leaving, he counts the whole thing, and he says, according to what he can tell by what we follow, Matan Torah was actually not on the 50th, but on the 51st day. To which there's many, many answers, including Rav Kook said, well, God said, I'm going to speak to you on the third day, and Moshe added a day. Okay, God said, I'm going to give the Torah on the third day, but you added a day. So still, we celebrate every year based upon when God said, not when Moshe added. Okay, and then Rav Kook says it's stronger even. He says the fact that God said it meant that there was an aspect of the Shekhinah that was already coming down from heaven on the 50th day. The fact that we weren't ready to the 51st day is something else. Okay, as I said, that's part of a whole another and longer discussion. But the Magen Avram is quite troubled that if you do the math, really the day of Matan Torah is the 51st day. So he ends up saying, perhaps this is evidence that we really should be keeping 2 days in Chutz La'aretz, and it comes out to him that the second day is really the day of Matan Torah, not the first day. So if that's the case, if the Magen Avraham is right, so then you should be reading about Bikurim on the first day, and which is the proper day for Bikurim, and you should be reading about Matan Torah on the second day, because that would be the proper day for that as well. Okay. By the way, the Magen Avraham asked a great question. How could it be that we say Yom Matan Torah Teinu on the first day of Shavuot when it's not true? Which is a great question in the end, and sometimes you have such a good question, you don't want to ruin it by giving an easy answer. The easy answer is we don't say Yom Matan Torah on the first day of Shavuot, we rather say Zman Matan Torah Teinu. And it could very well be that there's a difference between Yom versus Zman, because Yom would be this specific day, and then his question was stronger. And in his question he asks, how can we say Yom Matan Torah Teinu? And he gets all excited, he gives the whole long thing, and everybody who quotes it asks the same question, and they obviously, none of them opened up the Siddur to see what it is that we really say, and we don't say Yom Matan Torah Teinu at all. So I hate to ruin a good question by saying we don't. We say Zman. Again, you can argue. You can say that maybe Zman also means it, but it certainly weakens the question somewhat. So I have a very simple question for you, which I'm sure all of you were up last night thinking about, at least I was. Why would we shift between Shavuot and the Merkava to, in Parshat Yitro, read from Yeshayahu? No, this doesn't bother any of you. Yes. That Chag Shavuot, apparently, the main aspect which we end up following is to read about chapter 19 and chapter 20. In these chapters, what do we have? The preparation, the revelation, Aseret HaDibrot, and so on. And the Haftorah that we use in order to parallel that is the incredible revelation of Yechezkel. If you look at Yechezkel, if you look at source 4, the heavens open up and I saw visions of God, and you can read the rest of the chapter, the first chapter, which is what we read on Shavuot. So that's a pretty good revelation. It actually may even be somewhat better than, I don't want to, you know, give points to different Nevi'im, but if that's what we, listen, do we ever read the same Haftorah twice? Yes. We read the same Haftorah twice. It's not that we have every single week there's a different Haftorah. And if a theme necessitates the same Haftorah, we'll read it more than once. So, having said that, why is it that when it comes to Parshat Yitro, and we want to identify the revelation as the main aspect, we choose Yeshayahu as the way of expressing the revelation, while in Chag Shavuot, where we want to represent the revelation, we use Yechezkel, we use Ezekiel in order to represent the revelation. And that was my starting point into this whole topic. And again, for myself, any of you want to write a book afterwards, and what my first question was, okay, fantasy over. My first question over here was, why would this be the Haftorah by Yeshayahu if it really is picking up the same theme? What is different about the way that Yeshayahu picks it up versus the way Yechezkel picks it up? We're really on face value, Yechezkel may be a better way of doing it. It's interesting, and this is a Gemara that we've seen before. The Gemara in Source 3 says, sorry, not Source 3, in Source 5 says, Omer Rava, Kol Mashar Yechezkel or Yeshayahu. They saw the same thing. It's not even that what they saw was different. They saw the same thing. But then the Gemara goes on to say, "Ma Yechezkel dome leben kfar shirat hamelech, ma Yeshayahu dome leben krach shirat hamelech." That the difference between their prophecies was their relative experience and levels of comfort with seeing the divine, where Yechezkel's experience is one of exile. He continues and says, "Vani betocha gola, I'm among the exiles," and it's from chutz la'aretz that Yechezkel sees something which he's unfamiliar with, while Yeshayahu sees the Beit HaMikdash built, and he sees the Giloy Shekhinah with a live Beit HaMikdash. Yechezkel, on the other hand, just sees a heavenly Beit HaMikdash. Or, more specifically, Yechezkel does see Beit HaMikdash later on in the book, but he sees at this point what we call the Merkava, at least that's what the Gemara in Megillah said. He sees this chariot, yes. A town, like a small town versus. No, it means a small. It means a little one horse town or a much larger village. We read for the Merkava. There's like a yeshivish joke about this, and I know that you love those. The Mishnah says you're not allowed to learn the Merkava publicly. The Mishnah Chagiga says there's certain things you're not allowed to say publicly, and the Merkava you're not allowed to read publicly. So the question is, so then how can we read it for the Haftorah? So the answer is, we read it Shavuos morning, and everybody's sleeping. So it says only one person's allowed to learn it by himself, so that ends up happening. And every year on Shavuos, as I read the Haftorah, I'm watching everybody sleeping, I say, Baruch Hashem, we're not guilty of studying the Merkava publicly. Im lo neviim heim, b'nei neviim heim. So just to compound the question, the choice of Yechezkel and Yeshayahu, the truth is that they see a parallel vision. Yechezkel, because he's unaccustomed to it, explains it with far more detail, which, by the way, therefore makes Yechezkel a far more attractive prophet for people who are interested in studying mystical or spiritual things, because he uses so much more detail. Yeshayahu, who's accustomed to seeing holiness, sort of just explains it in a much more nonchalant way. So while it takes Yechezkel a whole chapter to describe, again, minute details, what does Yeshayahu say? He says, I saw God sitting on his throne. And while Yechezkel is far more excited about it. Okay. By the way, when it comes to Yechezkel and or Yeshayahu, we're told that this was something which Am Yisrael all had already experienced at this point. Rashi, from last week's parsha, source number 9, Ze Keli Va'anvehu. Right, this is my God. What does Va'anvehu mean? I will make beautiful. I will cherish. Just, I know it's not as nice as the English translations. Ze Eli Va'anvehu. Bichvodo, source 9 Rashi writes, Bichvodo Nigla Alehim. that Rashi understands that when it says Ze Eli, was Ze Keli Vanvehu, that Am Yisrael actually pointed with a finger. And they said Ze, they were looking and they said, that there is God. It says Bichvodo Nigla Lehem, so therefore it's understood that over here there was already what we would call a Gilui Shechina, there was already a revelation. V'hayu marino toba etzba, and they pointed at their fingers to indicate it, and then Rashi tells us, Ra'ata Shevcha Alayam, Mashalo Ra'u Nevi'im. And the revelation was even greater than what the prophets saw. Whether or not Rashi is overstating or not overstating the, you know, based on what the sources say is not clear. But if you look at Rashi's Makor, it's source number 20, which is an ancient midrash. It's from the Mechilta. The Mechilta is the Mechilta Rabbi Yishmael. Mechilta is parallel to the time of the Mishnah. Zekeli, Rabbi Lezer Omer, Minayin ata Omer, Sharata Shevcha Layam, Mashalo Ra'u Yishayahu, B'Yecheskel. So Rashi said Nevi'im, but it didn't say all Nevi'im over here. Rather, it focused on two. Now I can ask you again, what's the common denominator between these two Nevi'im? Instead of simply, and I hope that I'm not understating this, instead of simply getting a prophecy, these two Nevi'im actually had a revelation. So what it's saying is that the revelation at the sea was an incredibly profound and moving revelation. So it says, Afilu Shivcha Alayam. But by the way, what's the emphasis of Afilu Shivcha? What's the... Why Shivcha? Yeah, apparently that's what it's telling us, that it's someone who's even relatively low. If you look at source 22, the Gemara has a slight shift on this theme, but not less remarkable. Tanu Rabbanan, Darash Rav Yossi HaGlili. It was taught in the name of Rav Yossi HaGlili. The rabbis taught in the name of Yossi HaGlili. Bisha Sha'alu Yisrael Min Hayam. When Israel had ascended. By the way, it's interesting. That means that when they ascended, when they came up, what happened then? What? All the Egyptians are dying. Bisha Sha'alu Yisrael Min Hayam. Natnu Einehem. They looked. Lomar Shira, this is Shira. Olal mutal al birkei imo, even an infant on its mother's lap, v'tinok yonik mishtei imo, and an infant at its mother's breast. Kevin sharu et ha-shechina, that when they saw the shechina, olal higbia tzavaro, the infant lifted up its neck, v'tinok shamat dad, and the infant let go of the breast, mipiv, from its mouth, va'amru ze keli vanvehu. So over here, you have that this revelation is considered to be so overwhelming that it means that even people that you would normally say would have no capacity or ability. The Gemara here, by the way, goes on to say that even if women were pregnant at the time, then the fetus inside also stopped and pointed and said, said ze keli vanvehu. If you want, we could read that to the end. And it says, but the Gemara says, 1 second, but Amri Zechlevit, Shenemami people limbi on Akim, Yasada to Oz, right? It quotes a verse in Tehillim. Hoy Rabbi Meir, Omi Minan Shafilu Ubarim Shame Imanam Shir Shenemar, Bemakelot Berchu Elokim, Hashem mi Makor Yisrael. So what's the Makor Yisrael? What's the source of Israel? No, what's the source of Israel? The Jewish mothers. So it says, from the source, mi Makor Yisrael, the Gemara says, Vahalochazu, they couldn't see. It's a little dark in there. Amar Rabbi Tanchum Keres Naselam Akaspa Kalaria Hamira, that somehow the woman's stomach opened up and they had like those underwater observatories, right? So opened up and they're able to have look at and see, and then they started to sing Shira. So over here, what's the matter? So when the Mechilta tells us Avilu Shevcha Alayam, over here the Gemara continues with the same kind of theme. And just in case you thought the Shevcha, you know, was the least prepared. So it says, no, like everyone experienced by the Yam. Now the Gemara does tell us, the Mechilta tells us that the experience on the Yam, and I just wanted to focus you on something. The experience on the Yam, what did we just now learn? That it was even greater than Yishayahu and Yechezkel. which therefore should be somewhat. Okay, let's start again. That's interesting to us who now realize that Yeshayahu and Yechezkel have been identified as the two prophets who are contenders in order to describe a revelation. Is that clear enough? No? No. Somebody said no, so I have to try again. Okay. There are many, many prophets. There's many, many different, meaning, if I wanted to compare somebody to a prophet, I can compare them to countless prophets. Over here, when it says that what was experienced at the Yam, again, Rashi sort of just smoothed over this point. What did Rashi say? That they saw more than the Nevi'im. So Rashi, you read that Rashi, so it's just generic, you know, your everyday, generic, run-of-the-mill Navi. When you go back to Rashi's source, which is the Mechilta, and by the way, there are different sources that either limit it to Yechezkel or to Yechezkel and Yeshayahu. When we see Yechezkel and Yeshayahu mentioned together, then we realize that there is a common denominator between them. What is that? So let's go back to the beginning of what we studied today. On this week's parasha, the choice of the Haftorah is in Yeshayahu. On Chag Shavuot, when we read the same reading, what is the choice for the Haftorah? Yechezkel. What do they both have in common? They both have a revelation. So to describe the revelation that was experienced by the Jews as they got out of the sea, what are we told? We're told that it was the same as Yeshayahu and Yechezkel, so therefore now, once again, we realize the same point, that the main issue over here is the revelation, and these are the two prophets that best express revelation. Good? Now, when it says that it was even greater than the prophets, so I don't know how you figure that out, or greater than what was revealed to Yeshayahu and Yechezkel. What does that mean? Does that mean that they had a high definition prophecy television? Does it mean that they saw more? Does it mean that they saw more detail? Does it mean that they were more impacted? Which means, what exactly is this more? Especially when we're told that Yeshayahu and Yechezkel see the same thing. But what happens? Yeshayahu is not as intimidated as Yechezkel is intimidated. When the Mechilta wants to describe what happened, it goes back and looks at the Oz Yashir. One of the things that we say there in source number 7, Hashem Ish Milchama, God is a man of war. Hashem Ish Milchama, Lama Ne'emar, why does it say that? Lefi Shenigla, Nigle Al Hayam Ki Gibor Ose Milchama, Shene'emar, Hashem Ish Milchama, Nigla B'Sinai, Kizakein Malei Rachamim, Shinemar V'Yiru Et Elkei Yisrael, and so on. Which means the Mechilta over here tells us they both had a revelation, but the revelation at Sinai compared to the revelation at the sea, at the Yam, was that at the Yam God revealed himself as a man of war, while at Sinai God reveals himself as an elderly scholar. Now, I would please ask you not to get too into the images over here, and instead realize that the images are used to convey an idea. So it's not saying that here God was, you know, really, you know, he looked like he had worked out a lot and he's really, you know, buff. And when it came to Har Sinai, then God had grown his beard a little bit, let his payas down, and whatever. That's not what it's asking you to see, but it's telling you that the content of the revelation, which means we're really progressing a little bit. It's not just generic revelation, but the content of revelation can be different. That the content of revelation at the sea was an overwhelmingly frightening revelation. And maybe that's picked up by the Midrash, where the Malachim come and say to God, well, why you want to save these and kill these? Elu avodah zarah ve'elu avodah zarah. And as the Jews are going into the water, maybe they feel they're not going to come out of the water. Maybe that moment felt like a moment where they were just not going to make it, and therefore there was a lot more fear, a lot more angst, a lot more yirah than there was when it gets to Har Sinai. Now, I'm not saying that Har Sinai was devoid of any of those elements, but Har Sinai, no matter what it was with all the revelation, what this Mechilta was trying to tell you is that the aspect of God that was manifest was a lot more laid back by Har Sinai than it was by the sea. That the sea was a far more frightening experience. And, excuse me?
They were active there. They were running away. They were afraid.
Right. No, absolutely. But that's what's being expressed over here in the Mechilta.
Does that mean that the revelation is affected by the psychological state of the person receiving the revelation?
That's a very interesting question. Apparently the answer is yes. And again, if you're not really convinced about this, go back and read what Gemara said about Yeshayahu and Yechezkel. It says that they see the same thing. They see the same thing. What's the matter?
That's how people are.
That's how people are.
The exact same event and reported completely differently.
Correct. Correct. So, and maybe this comes as somewhat of a surprise when it comes to prophecy, because you would have thought that a prophet is at least as good as a reporter for the New York Times, right? Okay, maybe not. Right.
And then they actually see how Hashem destroyed Mitzrayim.
Shouldn't she be teaching? Isn't she great? Right. Absolutely.
So that's correct,
and that's what the Mechilta is saying. Hashem Ish Milchama. And they come out singing Hashem Ish Milchama. But what it's telling us is something interesting, is that we then have another revelation. And by the way, and there, again, it's compared to even more than Yeshayahu and Yechezkel see, because Yeshayahu and Yechezkel don't see that same intensity. They don't have that same kind of fear and angst which are taking place over here. But what they see is more comparable to what? To what happens by Sinai. Okay? Yeah. Yeah, and just in case you're not sure, slip of the pen, the Mechilta says it again in Source 8. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Lama Ne'amar, Lefish Neglal Yam Kibor. God has to reintroduce himself. Hi. Anochi Hashem Elokecha. I'm the one who took you out of Egypt. Why does God have to say that? Because they were shocked, because they were convinced that whoever took them out of Egypt was man of war. Right? That's what it says. Hashem Ish Milchama. And over here, I know that you think man of war is like a racehorse, and it's... Over here, in sentences, Lefish Lama Ne'amar, Lefish Nigla LaYam Ki Gibor Osem Melchama Shenemar Hashem Yishu Melchama Nigla Har Sinai Kizaken Malei Rachamim. Yes, absolutely. No, but what Marion is asking is absolutely a fair question. I alluded to it when I presented this. There are elements of certain midrashim and certain gemarot, and even based on the text of the Chumash itself, that the people are afraid and they back up and they recoil from the experience. Which means, even by Hashem, which is a kain, a malei rachamim, could be a very scary thing, right? Like the Wizard of Oz, you know? Okay, whatever. Right before the curtain is pulled. It's, but again, the experience, this is really what we're focusing on, the revelation, what we're being told over here is a different revelation, but God says, I am the same God. It's not that God has changed, this is the same God, but our perspective, which goes back to your point, our perspective had changed dramatically between those two episodes, and again, it's interesting that over here, it's compared to Yeshayahu and Yechezkel, it says even beyond Yeshayahu and Yechezkel, and over here it says, no, Yeshayahu and Yechezkel are chosen. Now, let's at least proceed a little bit so we can maybe get...
Were there any other revelations supposedly after that we consider revelations?
Not to the same degree. Yechezkel is considered to be the main revelation, and that's the one that was chosen in the Mishnah, in the Braitod, in the Gemara, by the Mekubalim to utilize as somewhat of a spiritual elevator. The Merkava, the chariot that goes up into heaven, is deemed as like a spiritual elevator that you can get in and sort of go into heaven, which means, I'll try to describe this as best I can. God showed the Nevi'im images, visual images. The Navi then would use their words to try to capture a visual image. So what we've, I think, already have all understood today is that each and every single person seeing a visual image, not just that they may be seeing different things, it's more than that, that each one would use different words based upon their experience, based on their associations, based upon where they are right now, they would use different words to describe it. Being that Yechezkel lived after the Chorban, and that he's in Galut, Ani b'toch ha-Gola, he's in Galut, his prophecy and his experience is considered to be the most accessible one for those of us who live after the Chorban. Because when it comes to Yeshayahu standing in, you know, in the temple courtyard, seeing things and just being nonchalant with it, that doesn't speak to us as much, because, again, he's taking so much for granted, and his words are just going to be so much beyond us. Which means, if you want to think of it this way, Yeshayahu contains concentrated prophecy, while Yechezkel is watered down, and therefore, because Yechezkel is watered down, it's more appropriate for us who can't possibly understand the concentrated form. If that sentence made any sense to you, then you're all in trouble. Yeah. I don't think so. I'd have to look and see that. Matan Torah, Har Sinai. Okay. Okay. Whose lecture? Okay. 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 So let's then try to proceed and make some progress and get to some kind of a conclusion. Let's see how much we're going to skip. By the way, we say this, the two different types of revelations, we say it every week in davening, every Shabbos. You remember where? So it's you'll see, I show it to you, you'll see it's so obvious, that, and maybe, but maybe this week you'll note it. In source number 11, in Anim Zmirot, Zikna b'yom din uvacharut b'yom krav. The yom din is the day when the laws were given. Zikna b'yom din uvacharut b'yom krav. But during the battle, God looked like he was young. Kish mochamot yadav lo rav. Okay, so just in case you've just sort of like we're already folding up your talos at that point and not paying attention to what was being said, so you can take note of that. Okay, so let's go back to the beginning. Not the first source, but back to the beginning. I started and asked an obvious question and said, we read the same thing on Yitro and we read the same thing on Chag Shavuot. We read the Aseret HaDibrot, and therefore, being that it's the same, ostensibly we should have the same Haftorah. Now, maybe I'm wrong about this. Maybe we don't read the same thing. Maybe, in fact, we read two different things, although they're very, very similar. And what I'm referring to is something which, as far as I know, the first source that discusses this is source 24, the Chizkuni, or the first one who puts it in these clear terms. Yesh birov hadibrot shtei niginot. The lamed. Okay, before I read further, we have something which is called Tam Elyon and Tam Tachton. Now, for those of you that this is totally meaningless, when you go to shul on Shabbat, if you have a Koran Tanakh or Koran Chumash, and you open up in the back of the book, it will show you by the Aseret HaDibrot that there's two types of ways of reading it. There is one type we read now, which is called Tam Elyon, Tam Tachton, one type, which is called Tam Elyon. And why there are two different traditions for reading it is something which is beyond what I'm going to talk about now. There, again, a lot. There's a lot what to say. But basically, we read the Torah differently on Chag HaShavuot than we read it on Parshat Yitro. We don't read the Aseret HaDibrot the same way. What's the difference between the two? When we read it on Chag Shavuot, we ignore what you would call the normal trop, the main, the various aspects. The main aspect is we ignore what's called the Sof Pasuk. And I just want to stress something. Most women never learned how to read from the Torah. Okay, that's very bad. I'm not saying that women should read from the Torah, but they need to understand the trup. Because if you don't understand the trup, then your knowledge of reading Chumash will be diminished. And it's completely beyond me. Why in the world, from elementary school, and then they shouldn't wait for bar mitzvahs. I'm saying they shouldn't wait for bar mitzvahs. They should be teaching all little kids to read the... They should be teaching all little kids to read the Chumash. Reading the Chumash means not just reading the words, it means also reading the trup. Over here, the main issue of the trup is something which all of you are familiar with, which is called Sof Pasuk. By the way, Sof Pasuk is the one mistake that if a Bal Kori makes, he should be corrected. If he skips the Sof, at Nachta also, but Sof Pasuk for sure. If he misses, it just has a run-on sentence, then he's misunderstanding what he's reading. So therefore, if you were to look in Parshat Yitro, in the Aseret HaDibrot, and you can open it up and look, I'm not going to do that now, you'll notice that there are various places where you have ends of verses. Okay, maybe I will open it up now, and I'll take one example of it, which is maybe the major difference between the two. Perek Kaf, if you go to the end of the Aseret HaDibrot, Lo tisach, lo tinaf, lo tignov, lo tenebriacha et shaker is all one verse. Yud Gimel. Pasuk Yud Gimel in Perikaf is lo tirtzach, lo tinaf, and if you want to do the trap, lo tirtzach, lo tinaf, lo tignov, lo tenebriacha et shaker. That would be pretty much how to read it with its proper pausing. In the Tam Elyon, those are four different verses. Lo tirtzach, period. Lo tinaf, period. Lo tignov, period. Lo taneh b'recha et shaker, period. What's the difference between the two? According to the Tam Elyon, you have 10 commandments. Aseret dibrot. Each dibur, which is presumably the singular of dibrot, each dibur, what does the word dibur mean? Utterance or statement. So therefore, there are 10 statements. If you want 10 statements, that means let's say in your mind, if you were writing it, what would you write? You would push enter, right, after each one and have a new paragraph even. Right? Lo tirtzach is serious enough. It should be its own sentence. Over here, the way that it's written in the Chumash is lo tirtzach, lo tinaf, lo tignov, lo tanever echad shakar. Those are four dibrot, four pretty good ones, all in one verse. How do we read it in Parshat Yitro? In Parshat Yitro, we read it as four of them in one verse. In Chag Shavuot, how do we read it? Each one of them a separate verse. So what would that indicate? That would indicate that on Chag Shavuot, we are trying to re-experience the way that God spoke the Ten Commandments, while in Parshat Yitro, we are studying what was said by the Ten Commandments, which means Parshat Yitro, I'll say it the other way, Parshat Chag Shavuot, which is the day that it happened, is a re-experience of the revelation that took place. Yitro, the way that it's read, it's not a re-experience, but here, finally, it's the content of what's being said. because over here it's just reporting the words. We're studying the words of what is said. Let's read the Chizkuni now. Chizkuni, by the way, is also fairly early. He's a Rishon. Chizkuni writes in verse 24, Yesh b'rov hadibrot shtei niginot. By most of the Ten Commandments, there are two different traditions about how to read them, what the tune is. Lilame, this teaches you, sheba'atzeret on Chag Shavuot, shehi dugma matan Torah, that is an experience, an example of matan Torah. We do it in one proper way, and just skip to where it's underlined again, v'dibrot lo tirzach, lo tinaf, lo tinov, lo taneh, korin b'nigot haktanot, lasot dalet psukim, shem dalet dibrot. So that on Chag Shavuot, they become four independent, separate utterances. Aval b'chodesh Shvat, which is what we're up to now, kishakorin parshat Yitro, kishar Shabbatot Hashana, korin lo yelacha uvzachor b'negeot haktanot, lasot mikol achad mehem dalet psukim, v'dibrot lo tirtzach, lo tenaf, lo tignov, lo tened korin b'negeot hagdolot, lasotan pasuk echad, lafi shalom matzinu b'kol mikra pasuk mishnei tefot, chutz mi'elu, v'shvot dafka kamo shepirashti lamala. He says, we never find in the Torah a verse of two words. There's no verses like this. So therefore, Yitro follows the normal way that the Torah is written, and therefore we read it in the way that it's written. But on Chag Shavuot, we're not focusing on what's written in the Torah. What are we focusing on? On the way that God said it. Which means that the way that God dictates it to Moshe to write, and the way that God said it at Har Sinai, are not necessarily the same. Right? That's what emerges from the Chizkuni, and therefore the Chizkuni is explaining why we have two different traditions of Tam Al Yom and Tam Tachton. One represents the way that God said to write it, which is the way we have to read it on Yitro, because what do we do on Yitro? It's Kriyat HaTorah. And only in Chag Shavuot are we brazen enough to try to imitate the way that it was actually said, because that is based upon the experience of the revelation, the experience of Matan Torah. So now, if I had to... Which one? Is a reenactment, right. So now, when we are trying to reenact the experience, the revelation of Har Sinai, then we chose Yechezkel, which we already have described as more detailed and also far more experiential. When we are focusing on Parshat Yitro, and again, the main issue is the revelation, here we chose the revelation in Yeshayahu, which is not as detailed, but we did something else. What else is it that we did? We jumped all the way to Perek Tet, and then we talk about the child being born, and then we talked about the continuation of the Davidic dynasty. What's the difference between the two? When you're re-experiencing something, you're caught up in that experience. You're not thinking, you're not analyzing, you're not making associations. You're experiencing. And that's Yechezkel. When it comes to the way that we read it in Yitro, what are we really thinking about? We're thinking that there was a revelation. What else are we thinking about? There was the revelation at Sinai doesn't end. How does it continue? It continues eventually through the Mishkan and eventually through the Beit HaMikdash, and eventually, you're absolutely right, Ki Mitzion Tetzei Torah, which means Torah, which was given at Har Sinai, eventually makes its way to Har Habayit, and Har Habayit becomes the place of this continual, what we call Giloy Shechina. When we experience in Yechezkel, or when we experience in Chag Shavuot, all that we're thinking about is taking ourselves back to that moment and seeing a revelation. But when we're reading it in Parshat Yitro, what are we really asking ourselves? Why was there a Giloy Shechina so long ago? Why can't there be another Giloy Shechina? When will we ever get to the situation that the Beit HaMikdash will be rebuilt? When we get to a situation where a Ben David will come? And that's the continuation of what we read in Yeshayahu. It skips a couple of chapters. And by the way, whether this child was born then or not born, we won't... What does it say the way that we would read it today through our eyes as we're sitting in shul reading the Torah? Ki yulad yeled lanu ben yitad lanu v'tikha misra al shechmo v'kwesh mo pele yo'etz el gibor avi ad sar shalom l'marbe ha-misra l'shalom en ketz al kisei David v'amlato l'achin oto l'sa'ada v'mishpa p'tzdaka me'etava adolan, and so on. Which means, here a child will be born who will continue the Davidic dynasty. He will be the one who will take responsibility. And what the implication of this is, that the same way that David and Shlomo built the Beit HaMikdash and caused there to be a Giloy Shechina, that's the continuation of what we're expecting and what we're hoping for. Which means, when it comes to Chag Shavuot, we're only focusing on what happened as the heavens opened up. So what's the Haftorah? Haftorah is when Yecheskel sees the heavens open up. And we're just focusing on the revelation itself. In Yitro, we're not focusing on the revelation on the experiential level. We're not re-experiencing it. Rather, what we're doing is we're studying it, we're learning about it, we're making associations about it, and then the final association, as we learn about it, is we say, well, when will this happen again? Or it will happen again, and that's the prophecies that there will be a Ben David, and there will be a continuation of the Davidic dynasty, which means there will be a Beit HaMikdash, which means there will be a Giloy Shechina, and that's the hope that the Haftorah that we choose to read on Parshat Tiro ends. So what I'm saying is that my initial question, why don't we have the same Haftorah, we have the same reading, it may very come out, the conclusion may very well be, is that the words are the same, but the reading is different, and the fact that the reading is different belies a much deeper expression of two different religious experiences. The religious experience of Torah, of learning Torah, versus the religious experience of having a Giloy Shechina, of having a revelation. Shabbat Shalom. Yeah. I skip, by the way, a lot of sources about this, about Moreh Gadol. The Haggadah does speak about a revelation by the sea. Moreh Gadol zu Giloy Shechina. It does speak about it. No, it does speak about it, but it's not the conclusion of the... Meaning, it leads you to Har Sinai and leads you on forward. It is. No, not... Zu Giloy Shechina is mentioned.